Welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha, a podcast shared by David Roylance. This podcast is dedicated to guiding you to completely eliminate the discontent mind and the suffering it causes by attaining enlightenment. Learn and practice the teachings of Gautama Buddha that will guide you to fully attain a peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. To support this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha or visit buddhadailywisdom.com, where you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online learning resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Now, here's our teacher to share more.
Sawadee krap. Hello and welcome to Daily Wisdom, Walking the Path with the Buddha. Today is our group learning program and we're in our second class of restarting our entire group learning program, where I'm starting a four-part series on learning breathing mindfulness meditation. Over the next four Wednesdays, I'm going to be gradually helping to build you up in your meditation practice. Of course, you're the one who's doing the work to learn and understand, and I'm applying the guidance to be able to help you understand how to build up your breathing mindfulness meditation practice, because this is a core central aspect of your life practice to move the mind to this enlightened mental state where the mind's peaceful, calm, serene, and content with joy. So welcome to all of you, whether you're joining for the first time or you've been joining regularly or plan to join regularly over the coming months. Welcome to our class today. And typically what I'll do is start classes with doing meditation. But today what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with teaching you about meditation. And then at the end, we're going to do meditation together. So I'll guide you guys in a meditation session after I teach you guys about breathing mindfulness meditation. And then going forward, I'll be starting each class with breathing mindfulness meditation. As we go in our class, you're always welcome to ask any and all questions that you like. You can put your questions into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Or in Zoom, you can electronically raise your hand and ask any questions or follow-up questions directly. So I'm going to share with you the teachings on breathing mindfulness meditation by starting with some words of the Buddha, because it's helpful to understand what the Buddha taught on various topics. Understanding his original words is what's going to help guide you in your practice, whether it's meditation or any other aspect of developing your practice to move the mind to enlightenment. Studying with the original words of the Buddha is so important. So in this 13-book book series that I share, which is titled The Words of the Buddha, The Path to Enlightenment, Revealing the Hidden, there's one specific book that is devoted to meditation. It's volume 7. This is titled Breathing Mindfulness Meditation, and it consolidates the teachings of the Buddha into one book related to meditation. So he's taught an extensive amount about meditation, but he's also taught a lot about other things too. You wouldn't be able to just meditate your way to enlightenment. So here what I've done is just extracted a couple of teachings to help you understand a little bit about what the Buddha is teaching around meditation, but there's a whole extensive collection of teachings that the Buddha shares related to meditation and building up your practice. These are just a couple to be able to help illustrate a few points. This first one, he says, meditate, monks, or you might think of that as meditate, students. Do not be complacent, lest you regret it later. This is my instruction to you. So here the Buddha is encouraging you not to be complacent or dull or lethargic or having a lack of initiative or willingness to do something. Instead, he's encouraging you to have just the opposite. To have dedication, determination, and diligence to applying effort and energy to building up your meditation practice. Because if you're complacent in your meditation practice, you're going to regret it later. So when you're angry or frustrated or agitated or annoyed or any of these other discontent feelings that are experienced in the unenlightened state, you'll regret having not meditated, because those feelings are no fun to experience. They're very painful. If you're lonely, if you're bored, if you're having jealousy or shyness or resentment or any other discontent feelings, it's not fun to experience discontentedness. So you can eliminate these discontent feelings by training your mind on the path to enlightenment, with meditation being a primary aspect of that training. But if you were complacent, you wouldn't be able to experience that peace and joy that is the enlightened mind. So the Buddha here is encouraging his students not to be complacent, to be dedicated, determined, and diligent in developing your practice. This next one, he says, a pot without a stand is easy to tip over. a pot without a stand is easy to tip over. What he's sharing here is that a mind without a meditation practice is very easy to become discontent. The pot is your mind, and the stand is the meditation practice. So a mind without a meditation practice is very easy to become discontent. It's very easy to tip over your mind because you don't have this stability, this steadiness that is created through training the mind in meditation. So right now, your pot or your mind might just have like a little dowel rod kind of with the pot kind of teetering, right? It may be very easy for you to become annoyed or frustrated or agitated or some other discontent feeling. But as you develop your meditation practice more and more, as I'm going to teach you today, it's like making that stand wider and wider and wider and wider. And then it's harder and harder to tip over the pot because you have a really strong stand, really stable, solid stand. So the same thing is true as if you have a really solid, stable meditation practice, it'll be very challenging for your mind to be tipped over. But ultimately, when you get to enlightenment, you won't experience any discontentedness at all, that it'll be completely stable and steady and unshakable. Your mind won't experience even the slightest bit of ickiness or discontentedness in any way once the mind has uprooted the causes and conditions that are producing those discontent feelings. And this Sunday in our class is the very beginning of where I'm really going to start sharing with you the teachings that it takes in order to understand how to move your mind to this enlightened mental state. So far last Sunday, I just kind of introduced students to the teachings of the Buddha and to the group learning program. And now I'm coming in with meditation to teach you that because you're going to need to build that up in order to develop your life practice. So this next teaching here, the Buddha is talking about the importance of breathing mindfulness meditation. He says, monks, there is one thing that when developed and cultivated leads exclusively to liberation, to freedom from strong feelings, to elimination, to peace, to direct knowledge or experience, to enlightenment, to nibbana. What is that one thing? Mindfulness of breathing, or breathing mindfulness meditation. This is that one thing that, when developed and cultivated, leads exclusively to liberation, to freedom from strong feelings, to elimination, to peace, to direct knowledge or experience, to enlightenment, to nibbana. So here the Buddha is saying that this meditation of breathing mindfulness meditation, it leads to one thing, which is getting to enlightenment, getting to this peace and this joy. He's not saying that you only need one thing in order to get to enlightenment. Otherwise, he would have just taught meditation and that's it. From the time that he was 35 until he died at the age of 80, he was sharing the teachings for 45 years of what it takes to get to enlightenment. And he taught many different topics, not just meditation. Sometimes people think that he sat under a tree, he meditated, and then he instantly got to enlightenment. But this isn't actually true. That meditation is part of your practice, but it's not the entire practice. So you're going to need to learn meditation, but you wouldn't be able to meditate your way to enlightenment. But you also wouldn't be able to get to enlightenment without meditation either. So what the Buddha is saying is this meditation, it leads to enlightenment. It leads to this peaceful, calm, serene, and content mind with joy. It's kind of like saying your car, it leads to one thing, or the purpose of this car is of one thing, which is transportation. This car leads to transportation. So what the Buddha is saying here is this meditation leads to one thing, which is enlightenment. The only purpose of this meditation is to move the mind to enlightenment. There's no other purpose for this meditation. So I'm going to be teaching you guys breathing mindfulness meditation in the way that the Buddha taught. Now, over the next four sessions, I'm going to be teaching you the breathing mindfulness meditation. And then after that, I'm going to teach you the loving kindness meditation in four individual sessions on Wednesday. And where you can't make the Wednesday classes, you can listen to the recording either on YouTube, on Facebook, or on our podcast. You'll be able to digest the content from there. So to get us started, I'm going to talk about some meditation basics, just to kind of lay down some groundwork to be able to help us then talk about meditation to be able to build up your practice. First is just defining what meditation is, because different people have different perspectives. Everybody might have a different perspective of what meditation is. But if you're going to learn what I'm sharing in terms of meditation and what the Buddha taught, it's important that you understand and establish a definition of what the Buddha taught as meditation. You may or may not agree with this particular definition, but this is how I'm describing meditation. And now whenever I talk about meditation, you'll know what I'm describing. Here, the way that I define meditation in the book and in the classes is that meditation is a technique to actively train the mind during dedicated, independent, purposeful training sessions to eliminate unwholesome qualities of the mind and or cultivate wholesome qualities of the mind in the positions of seated, lying, standing, or walking. So it's a dedicated, active, purposeful training session where you're eliminating certain unwholesome qualities and cultivating certain wholesome qualities. And you're going to be doing this in one of four positions, either seated, lying, standing, or walking. And you'll be able to learn these different positions as part of your journey to enlightenment. So sometimes when people are talking in daily life, they might say, you know, I'm going to go exercise and meditate, or I'm going to go walk the dog and meditate, or I'm going to go do some gardening, or I'm going to go for a drive and meditate. It's important to understand that these things aren't meditation. Even though people are using that in common language, they might say, I'm going to go for a drive and meditate. This isn't actually meditating. This is driving, or this isn't actually meditating. It's gardening or walking the dog or exercising. And these things can be very beneficial for someone's life. They might actually really enjoy going to do these things or others. But it's important that you understand that these aren't meditation, because here in a moment, you're going to hear me share about a time, a schedule, and a frequency of how often you should be meditating. And if you thought that exercising or walking the dog was meditating, and you went and walked the dog two or three times a day, thinking that you're training your mind to get to enlightenment, you wouldn't be able to actually get to enlightenment if you're out there gardening and driving, thinking that that's meditation. Now, you may do these things in your life, but it's important to understand that it's not meditation, that it could be beneficial for you. You might really enjoy doing those activities, but don't consider that meditation. Meditation is this dedicated, active, purposeful training session to eliminate certain unwholesome qualities and cultivate certain wholesome qualities. And you're doing this in the seated, lying, standing, and walking positions. Another aspect of understanding meditation basics is it's important to have a teacher. If you don't have a teacher, you can run into a lot of difficulties and a lot of struggles. As you heard me teach on Sunday, if you attended class or you listened to that replay, is only a Buddha would actually be able to get to enlightenment by themselves without the help of any teachers or any guides. And the last Buddha that was currently known to the world existed over 2,500 years ago. So you'll be able to get to enlightenment, but you're going to need guidance from teachers in order to do that. Where a Buddha can actually get to enlightenment on their own without the help of teachers or any guides. If you were out there just watching videos or reading books and trying to meditate, trying to awaken the mind to enlightenment without any guidance, you can run into a lot of serious difficulties and a lot of problems. I've actually had students contact me over the years that ran into these types of difficulties. I'll tell you about one particular story to illustrate this point so you'll understand that it's important to have a teacher. And whether you consider me to be your teacher or somebody else, it's important to have somebody you can reach out to in order to get some help and guidance. There is this one individual who contacted me several years ago that they were for 2 years surfing the internet, getting YouTube videos, reading books, trying to get to enlightenment on their own just by dabbling with all these different things and training their mind. And after about 2 years, they got into some real difficult situations. This person was an actual practicing doctor, and they got to the point where they couldn't work anymore. They couldn't go to work. They were sleeping about 23 hours a day. They were in severe depression. Their relationships were starting to fall apart, and they were even having suicidal thoughts. And this is all because they were out there mixing and matching and dabbling with these teachings and doing these things to the mind that they didn't really actually understand. And they got to the point after 2 years that their life was such a calamity and so difficult that for one reason or another, this person reached out to a teacher and found help, and they found me, and they started talking to me, and they started learning for about 3 or 4 months online. And then eventually they ended up coming here to Thailand and spent a little bit of time learning here. And then they ultimately went back to their own country. And over about a 4 to 6 year period, they ultimately worked their mind out of those difficulties. They got back to work. They weren't sleeping so long. They didn't have the depression, the suicidal thoughts. They did end up losing a relationship with their fiance, but nonetheless, they did end up getting back to a normal average life and conducting themselves in a way that they could be functional in their day-to-day life. I don't suspect that you will ever experience these kinds of difficulties especially if you have a teacher. But this is the potential of what can happen if you're just out there on your own, not understanding what it is that you're doing to the mind, because you don't have the wisdom of how to train your mind. So it's important to have somebody that you can reach out to. You can't ask questions to a book, and you can't necessarily reach out to an individual teacher if you don't have one. So it's important to have a relationship with a teacher. And it doesn't mean you need to contact that person weekly or monthly or even every 3 or 4 months, but just have somebody that you can reach out to when you're experiencing certain things in your meditation and you can get help. And if what you get back from the teacher is, that's normal, keep going, that can give you some reassurance and some confidence that you're on the right path and you can just continue to keep going. But if you don't have somebody to reach out to, you can get to a situation where your mind's kind of unraveling on itself, like this individual. So again, I don't think that you're going to experience these kinds of things, especially if you have a teacher. So this is just to help you illustrate and understand why it's so important to have a teacher, because your mind doesn't have the wisdom to awaken by itself. You're going to need guidance from somebody that can help you. So make sure you have some type of teacher that you can reach out to personally. Then there are certain meditation positions that you will need to be able to learn as part of your development on the path to enlightenment. There's seated, lying, standing, and walking positions. I'm going to share with you what these positions are and how I use them. But then, as I taught you in previous classes, don't believe anything that I share. Don't just believe what I'm sharing. Don't just follow me, what I'm doing. Instead, learn what I'm sharing intellectually. Then reflect on it and then practice it and see the truth for yourself. So I'm going to share with you how I use these different positions, and then you can use them in those ways if you like and see if it works for you. But you might find other ways to use these positions too. And that's part of you developing your practice, being your own independent journey, not a follower, not a devotee, but instead you're your own independent practitioner looking to get to wisdom. So I will share with you how I use these positions, and then it's up to you to utilize these positions in different situations to see what works best for you. So the seated position is kind of like the primary position that a lot of people use. It's kind of like the go-to position in meditation because it's really accessible. You can sit on the floor, you can sit in a chair, you can sit any number of places, and you'll be able to then meditate. So oftentimes people are learning in the seated position, and that's kind of like their go-to position. So if you're sitting, you might be sitting on the floor with a cushion under your rear with your legs lightly crossed. Or you might be sitting in a chair with your feet flat on the floor or lightly crossed at your ankles. It's up to you to sit however you're comfortable. I'll give you some guidance on the sitting position when we actually do meditation today. But in the seated position, there might be times where you feel pain. Maybe your hip, your knee, maybe your back is hurting. And that's where lying position comes in. If you lie on the floor on your back, face up with your arms out to the side, in yoga, I think they call this resting pose or corpse pose or shavasana. This is a pose that where all the muscles in the body are completely relaxed, where you can lay on the floor and go face up. You could also do this in a bed too, but the challenge with lying position is you can sometimes potentially fall asleep. What you're doing with the mind in all these four positions is exactly the same. But as you're lying, you could notice you're falling asleep. You could even notice that in the seated position. Sometimes people fall asleep there. So if you're noticing that you're dozing off, you might switch to like a standing position or a walking position. The standing position, you just stand up on your 2 feet. You put your arms in the front of you with your hand lightly clasping at the wrist, or you put your arms along the side of your body, or you clasp your wrist behind your back. So it's really whatever is comfortable for you. So there's the standing position. This can kind of invigorate the mind a little bit, that you're not lying, so there's less of a tendency to fall asleep. And then there's walking position, which is also good if you're starting to fall asleep, but also it's really good if you have an overactive mind. Sometimes you might be looking to sit down and meditate, and the last thing you're thinking about is being still and being in one spot. You might have an overactive mind. And in this situation, you can do walking meditation. This is a very specific way of walking. It's very intentional walking. And I have some different videos and online classes where I've taught this. So if you'd like to learn walking meditation, I don't teach it as part of the group learning program because I use a stationary camera. But in some of the other courses and retreats that I teach and some of the videos that I've created. I've had somebody follow me around with a camera. So you can easily go access a video on our YouTube channel by searching on our YouTube channel for walking meditation, and you'll learn how to do this. Because this is really helpful as a standalone. You could just do walking meditation to get rid of that overactivity in the mind, or you could integrate it with some of these other positions. You don't need to just take one position and keep with that position all the way through your meditation. You can actually interchange these. So say you sat down to meditate for 3 minutes, 5 minutes, and you're noticing that your mind's overactive, you can switch and go to walking. Or maybe you're on your way to meditate and you're noticing that your mind's overactive or you're a little bit sleepy. Maybe you start with walking and then maybe you switch over to seated. And then maybe you go back to walking too. You know, you can switch them back and forth. It's really up to you how you use these different positions. So I'm gonna pause here and see what questions you guys have about anything that I've shared so far, just to kind of get you started with some of the meditation basics. And then I'm gonna go into some more detail about starting and conducting a meditation practice. So if you have questions, you can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom in the comment section, or in Zoom, you can electronically raise your hand. I'll call on you, you can just open up your mic and we'll be able to hear you, and you can ask any and all questions that you like. So let me know if you guys have any questions. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So I'm gonna move forward into the different types of meditations that you're gonna need to be able to learn as part of your journey to enlightenment. So the Buddha taught 4 primary meditations, and I'm gonna introduce you to all of these as part of this program, but I'm gonna teach you 2 of them in depth, because there's 2 meditations that everybody would need to learn in terms of their journey to enlightenment. And then there's kind of 2 optional ones that not everybody's going to need to learn. So the first one that you're learning now over the next 4 parts of the series is the breathing mindfulness meditation. This is designed to help you eliminate what's called craving, desire, attachment. You're gonna learn about this in our class on Sunday, of what this is. This is a certain unwholesome quality that's in the mind that you're working to eliminate. But then you're cultivating the wholesome quality of mindfulness or awareness of mind, while also training the mind to reside in the present moment, developing concentration or singleness of mind. So the wholesome qualities that you're cultivating in breathing mindfulness meditation is mindfulness or awareness of mind and concentration, to be able to focus on a single object in meditation, but then also outside of meditation too. Because your meditation is kind of like exercise. If you went to the gym and you exercised your muscle, then outside of the gym, you can use your muscles for moving furniture or doing whatever it is that you'd like to do with your muscles. Well, the same thing is true about the mind. Is in meditation, you're training your mind in a certain way so that now those wholesome qualities of mindfulness and concentration can now be utilized in your day-to-day life. And I'm going to teach you over the coming months about how these particular qualities of mind are so crucial for you on your path to enlightenment. Without mindfulness and concentration, you wouldn't be able to get to enlightenment. So this is an activity or an exercise or a tool or a technique with breathing mindfulness meditation that's going to help arise these wholesome qualities of mindfulness and concentration. And you're going to learn more about what these are in a few Sundays from now when I teach you about mindfulness and concentration. And then you're eliminating this craving, desire, attachment. This is the mind longing, yearning, chasing after things. You'll learn about this Sunday when I talk about it. And then the loving kindness meditation, I'm gonna preserve this for a month from now when I'm gonna start a 4-part series on loving kindness meditation. I'm gonna explain to you what this is and why it's important. And then there's a meditation to eliminate sexual cravings, and there's a meditation to realize non-self. These are kind of optional that some people need and some people don't. But everybody's gonna need the breathing mindfulness meditation and the loving kindness meditation. You can almost think of these like prescriptions. Some people refer to the Buddha like a doctor, that he saw certain symptoms in the mind, and then he applied a certain prescription or antidote or a remedy or a solution, and then he got to certain healing where the mind was actually healed. So these meditations are like a prescription, and they're antidoting or remedying certain symptoms that are in the mind. So you're eliminating certain unwholesome qualities and cultivating certain wholesome qualities. And here with breathing mindfulness meditation, you're eliminating craving, desire, attachment, and cultivating mindfulness or awareness of mind, and you're cultivating concentration or singleness of mind, ability to focus on a single object. Then in terms of starting and conducting your meditation, there's a few things for me to share with you here, and then we're going to move into actually doing a meditation session together. The first thing to understand is that the mind is the boss and the body is the employee. This is an analogy that I use to help you understand what you're looking to accomplish as you first start getting started with your meditation. That the mind is the boss and the body is the employee. These are two different things, the mind and the body. So what you're doing is you're working to train the mind. You're not training the body. Well, if you would like to train the body to get into a seated position on the floor, you certainly can. But that's not the ultimate goal of the path to enlightenment. The ultimate goal is to train the mind. But the thing is that you need to go through the body in order to get to the mind. You need to go through the employees in order to get to the boss. You can't just walk in and talk to the boss. You got to go through the employees in order to get to the boss. So the same thing is true with meditation, that you need to go through the body in order to get to the mind. So you would like the body to be comfortable. Whereas if the body is painful and you're experiencing pain, it's not going to take you to go see the boss, because the employees are painful. They're not going to take you to go see the boss. But also, if the employees are luxurious, they're going to be lackadaisical or maybe lazy, and they're not going to take you to go see the boss. So you're not interested in the body being painful, but you're not interested in it being luxurious either. You'd like it to be in the middle, where the body is comfortable. So whatever position you take, whether it's seated, lying, standing, or walking, you would like the body to be comfortable. At any point that you experience pain in the body, you would like to shift your body positioning and get to a point where it's comfortable. Or if you need to just change the position entirely from a seated to a lying, then you can do that as well, because you'd like to keep the employee comfortable. So it'll take you to go see the boss, which is the mind. If you read the original teachings of the Buddha and his guidance and instructions on meditation, he regularly says, set up mindfulness in front of you. You'll see this in his guidance and his instructions on meditation. When he's guiding his students to start their meditation, he will say, set up mindfulness in front of you, among other things. What mindfulness is awareness of mind. Sometimes people nowadays in modern society will use this word mindfulness in a way that the Buddha wasn't actually using it. The way the Buddha was using this word mindfulness was awareness of mind. So setting up awareness of mind in front of you. The way that you'll hear some people using it nowadays is they'll say, can you mindfully carry this glass of water to the table? Or can you mindfully do this? Or can you mindfully do that? What they're talking about is carefully. If someone's saying, can you mindfully carry this glass of water to the table? They're saying, can you carefully carry this glass of water to the table? They're just substituting the word careful and mindful. Well, if you would like to get to enlightenment, you're going to need to understand how the Buddha is using these words so you understand what he's actually encouraging you to do. So when he's talking about mindfulness, it's about awareness of mind. But more specifically, there's something called the four foundations of mindfulness that you're going to learn in a few weeks when I talk about mindfulness. So here, what the Buddha is teaching you is to set up this awareness of mind in front of you as you ease into meditation, that you don't just plop down into meditation, that you build this kind of awareness. So you kind of maybe take off your shoes, you kind of walk over to the area where you're going to meditate, you kind of sit down or lie or stand or whatever you're going to do, and you bring some general awareness to the mind as you're starting meditation. And I use chanting as a way to do this. And I'm going to be teaching this as well in this program, that the chanting helps to develop some mindfulness and awareness of mind and ease the mind into meditation. You don't need to chant in order to meditate, but you can. It's a practice that you can learn. Even if you're not chanting, it's important that you set up mindfulness or bring this general awareness of the mind before you start meditating. Because if you just plop down into meditation without mindfulness, it's probably going to be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes before you really start experiencing any benefit from your meditation. You would like to be experiencing benefit right from the beginning. So if you're setting up mindfulness in front of you before you start meditating, bringing some awareness of mind before you start meditating, you can start getting benefit right from the very beginning of your meditation session. So that's why I'm using chanting in order to develop that mindfulness and ease into meditation. But if you don't use chanting, just be sure you're doing something else in order to develop this mindfulness and ease the mind into meditation so that you're getting benefit right from the beginning. And then in terms of your time, frequency, and schedule of meditation, what you would like to do is build up to a 30-minute or more session. where you're meditating for that length of time. Now, that can sound like a whole lot for you right now, and that's understandable, but slowly but surely over time, you can build up to a 30-minute session. You would like to also develop a frequency of 2 to 3 sessions per day. And again, this can sound like a lot for you, but if you look at your life, there's probably a certain amount of unbeneficial things that you're doing right now that you could probably start to gradually clear out of your life, and that'll give you more time to actually meditate. It takes some students 6 months, a year, even 2 years to build up this type of frequency and duration in their meditation. So you'd like to build up to 2 or 3 sessions for 30 minutes or more. And again, it can take you several months or maybe even a year or two to gradually build up to that. But wherever you are, just start there. If you're starting with 1 session for 5 minutes per session, great, start there. If you have 2 sessions for 10 or 15 minutes, wonderful, start there. Wherever you're starting, just start there and then just gradually expand. What you're going to notice is that frequency is more important than duration. So it's a matter of 1 session for 30 minutes or 2 for 15 minutes. Go for the 2 for 15. This is actually going to be much more beneficial for you than the 1 for 30 minutes. And then wherever you start in terms of what you start in your practice, then just gradually expand it from there. You're not going to be able to have a fixed schedule for meditation. Like if you set up a schedule for yourself that you're going to meditate every day at 8 a.m., you're not going to actually be able to do this because your schedule isn't going to be permanent. It's going to be constantly changing. There's been times where I've been meditating and my son might walk in and say, "Hey, Dad, I need you to take me to school." And I've only been meditating for maybe 3 minutes or 5 minutes. And I'll say, "Well, I thought your mom was taking you to school today." And he's like, "Yeah, me too, but she's gone, so I need you to take me to school." So I needed to stop my meditation and get up and go take him to school. So you're not going to be able to have a fixed schedule where every day at 8 a.m. you're going to meditate. So what the Buddha did is he had these anchor points where he meditated morning, midday, and evening. You can see it in his teachings where he talks about this. The Buddha wasn't actually able to keep track of precise time because 2,500 years ago, they didn't have a timepiece to be able to keep track of precise time. So he didn't meditate for exactly a certain amount of time. He didn't meditate for at 8 a.m. every day or 1 p.m. every day or 5 p.m. every day. He wasn't able to do that. He meditated morning, midday, and evening. So there's nothing special about 3:30 a.m. that's going to make that more beneficial for you than meditating at any other time during the day. The Buddha didn't need a timepiece in order to get to enlightenment, and neither do you truly. But you're going to need to have these anchor points where maybe sometime in the morning you're going to meditate and maybe sometime in the evening. That's maybe your standard meditation is morning and evening. And then where you can, try to get in a midday meditation as you're able to. And as I mentioned, your frequency is more important than duration. So if you do 2 for 5 minutes and that's where you start, wonderful, just start there. Some people might try to meditate with an alarm or something like this. I don't suggest that you use an alarm on a regular basis because if you set an alarm, one of two things are going to happen. You're either going to be in meditation thinking, "Is it time yet? Is it time yet? Is it time yet? Is it time yet?" Your mind's going to be obsessively thinking about that. And you're going to need to let that go because that's the mind craving and the longing and the yearning. Or you're going to be deep in meditation, getting all kinds of benefit, and then your alarm's going to go off and you're going to realize like, "Wow, if I didn't set my alarm, I could have gotten so much more benefit out of this meditation." So if you don't need an alarm, it's best to not use one. Now, in some situations, you're probably going to be on your way to work and you only have 20 minutes to meditate, or you might be on your way to do something else and you only have 15 or 20 minutes to meditate. So in those situations, go ahead and use an alarm if you need to. But maybe in the evening or on the weekends when you're off, you don't need an alarm, then don't use one. Because setting your alarm is kind of like, I know what I'm going to be doing 20 minutes from now, and it's not going to be meditation. But you don't truly know what you're going to be doing even 1 minute from now or 5 minutes from now. Things are constantly changing in life. So if you set an alarm, it's going to put the mind in a situation where it's craving, "Is it time yet? Is it time yet? Is it time yet?" Or you're going to be deep in meditation, getting all that benefit, and then your alarm's going to go off and it's going to stop all the beneficial results. So in situations where you don't need an alarm, it's best to not use one. Then as you're starting to meditate, you might notice sleepiness, particularly within the first 3 to 6 months, you might notice a certain amount of sleepiness during your meditation. This is occurring because to train your mind and uproot these pollutions out of the mind, there's a certain amount of work, a certain amount of effort and energy that goes into this. And your mind's going to potentially get sleepy as you're doing this. But also, as you're lifting this pollution out of your mind, you're going to notice improved sleep, that your mind is going to be more interested in sleeping, perhaps, and it's going to be easier to sleep. And then when you do sleep, you're going to get a better and better quality sleep as you train your mind more and more. So you might notice in the first 3 to 6 months of starting a meditation practice that you get very sleepy during meditation or after meditation. So if this is the case, that during your meditation you're getting sleepy, you have one of two things you could do. Is one, you could just change positions. If you're in a seated or lying position, switch to a standing or a walking position. This is one thing you can do. If you'd like to extend your meditation sessions, is just switch to a different position. Or if you're noticing that you're sleepy and your mind hasn't been getting very much sleep and now it's starting to sleep better and better, having a better quality sleep, the second thing you could do is just get some sleep. Just go to sleep. If you need to sleep for the day, like in terms of the night, or if you need to take a nap or what have you, go ahead, get some sleep, get some good quality sleep. And then when you wake up, then you can do some meditation. So these are the two options of you can switch your position to extend your meditation to eliminate some of the sleepiness, or you can just get some rest and get some sleep. You might notice physical sensations during your meditation. This is where you might have like a little itch or something somewhere in the body, where as you're meditating, there's this kind of itch that arises here or there. Well, if you don't need to itch, it's best to not itch. That if you can train your mind to focus on the breath and to not pay attention to the itch, this is actually really helpful for the mind, because that itch is going to arise, it's going to change, and then it's going to fade away because it is impermanent. So if you can stay focused on the breath, unaffected by this impermanence, this is actually really helpful for you. But when you're first starting out, you might not have that discipline or that control of your mind. So if you're 5 seconds into this itch and you're just like, oh, I got an itch. Okay, go ahead and itch. You might notice that when you itch one spot, another one props up and another one crops up over here. And you might notice that you keep itching. So what you would like to do is, if you had to itch after 5 seconds, maybe next time an itch arises, try to go to 8 seconds or 10 or 12. And then if you have to itch that one, okay. But now expand it. Try to go to 15 seconds or 20 seconds and eventually get to the point over multiple meditation sessions where you can notice that there's an itch that arises, it changes, and it fades away, and you can just stay focused on the breath. You don't need to itch it. But initially, as you're getting going, you might need to actually do this as you're training your mind to have more discipline and more control. You might notice visual stimulation during your meditation. What I mean by this is you might see certain colors like green or purple or white or things like this. Or you might even have vivid imagery that's coming into the mind. You might have memories from the past or something like this. As these visual stimulation is coming up into the mind, you don't need to go out and figure out what these things are. This color of green, it doesn't mean you're going to be wealthy, or if you see the color purple, it doesn't mean your boyfriend or girlfriend's going to come back to you or anything like that. That's not what this is. Let me share with you what's actually occurring. The mind is one thing and the brain is something else. These are two completely separate things. And as you're training the mind, there's actual changes that are occurring to the brain. Researchers, scientists, doctors are starting to be able to study the brain for people who are meditating and people who are not. They're using MRIs, they're using CAT scans, they're using things like this to be able to observe anything that's going on in the brain while somebody's meditating. Or if somebody's been meditating for, say, 20 years continuously, what's the difference in their brain versus somebody else who has not done any meditation at all? So they can study this and they can see this through MRIs and CAT scans and other devices. And what they're showing is that the physical structures of the brain are changing. And you might actually notice this as you're meditating, that the physical structures of the brain are changing. I know that I used to walk around with a lot of pressure in my skull. I used to get a lot of migraine headaches to the point where I would vomit. Sometimes 3 to 5 times a week, I would get migraine headaches in the past. But as I started to meditate and train my mind, those things all dissipated. And there were times where I would actually be meditating and I could hear the physical structures inside the skull the brain was actually changing. So when I saw this through the scientists and research, it made a lot of sense to me, because what they were explaining that they were seeing was the same things that I was experiencing. So the physical structures of the brain are changing as you're training the mind. These things are two separate things, but there's a connection between the two of them. So when you're training the mind, this is really helpful to the brain, and these physical structures are changing. Sight is all happening inside the brain. The eye itself is just a lens that is bringing in light, but the processing to be able to have sight is actually occurring inside the brain. So even when the eyes are closed, you can actually see things. You can see different colors or different vivid imagery. So this is why you're seeing those kinds of things. It's not that you're a special person. There isn't some auspicious or superstitious thing coming up. You don't need to go out and think that way or have any kind of conceited thoughts. Just understand that if you see these different colors, that it's impermanent, it's temporary. You might see them for a period of time, even a number of months or a number of years, but eventually you'll move past that, because all the structures of the brain have actually changed. And now you won't be experiencing that anymore. There's nothing harmful, there's nothing painful, or it's not going to shake you up, but just know that you might have visual stimulation during your meditation. And it's nothing to go out and try to seek an answer for, because the answer is that it's the physical structures of the brain changing, and this is really healthy and very good for you as an individual. And then lastly, on this topic of starting and conducting your meditation, you might have been taught, or you might have seen, that people meditate with external stimulus. What I mean by this is like a candle or incense or maybe beads or music or a phone app or something like this. If you are actually meditating with those now, or you've heard of other people meditating with those things, I encourage you to not do those things and gradually move your mind away from those things, because the mind can grab on to these things and be attached to them. And what you would like to do is build up a practice where you strip all that away, where you only need three things to meditate. And you'll have these three things with you all the way through this entire life. Is all you need is the body, the mind, and the breath. You'll have these three things with you all the way through the end of this life until you take your last breath. So you'll have the body, the mind, and the breath. And if you can gradually build up a practice where you're just meditating with those three things, that means you can meditate anywhere, anytime. You know, I've been on airplanes traveling from the USA to Thailand, a 24-hour flight, and I needed to meditate during that period of time. So I was able to meditate right there in the chair on the airplane. Or you might be hiking in the mountains somewhere and you're 3 days from civilization. If you have your special candle that you can only meditate with, this special candle or this special cushion or this special beads or incense, you're not going to be able to meditate in those situations, because your mind isn't going to be able to meditate because it's attached to these particular things. So you'd like to strip all these things away out of your practice if you're currently using them. If you're not using them, wonderful. Don't need to pick those up. You can just continue to meditate without those things. But if you're currently using those things, you're going to need to gradually strip those away. And the mind in the unenlightened state, it doesn't like change. It doesn't like when you're shifting and changing things. It doesn't like impermanence. It's craving for things to be permanent. So if you're choosing to eliminate the incense or the candles or the beads or something else, a music or phone app or something like this, usually if you do this in small incremental changes, this is actually what will work best for your mind. Whereas if you just kind of drew a line in the sand and said, I'm never going to use that candle ever again, the mind's going to tend to revolt. It's not going to like this. So what you do is, any of these external things that you're using, you can do one session with it and then one session without it. One session with it, one session without it. One session with it, one session without it. You do that for a period of time, maybe like a week or so. And then your mind's completely comfortable with that. Maybe you do one session with it, two sessions without it. One session with it, two sessions without it. Now you do that for a period of time. And then you gradually expand to three sessions without it, four, five, six. And eventually you get to the point where you don't need this thing at all. You can just meditate with the body, the mind, and the breath. And this is how you can gradually move these things out of your meditation practice. But it's also true about anything that you're looking to change about your life practice. Say you're smoking cigarettes and you would like to eliminate the smoking of cigarettes in your life. Well, if you went cold turkey and you just tried to draw a line in the sand, this will be really hard for the mind, because it's not going to like that significant change. So if you can do small incremental changes, this is actually really helpful and really beneficial for you. So you can actually gradually decrease something like that over a period of time, and the mind will have a more sustainable change. And it's the same thing with wholesome things too. When you're bringing wholesome things into your life, if you gradually build them up, this is actually really helpful. That's why I don't recommend that you go out and force yourself to meditate 3 times a day for 30 minutes or more. The mind's going to revolt. It's not going to like that. So you just kind of gradually build it up. Wherever you start is where you start. 1 or 2 sessions for 5, 10, 15 minutes, however long that you are able to meditate. And then you just gradually build it up from there, little by little by little. And the way that you'll know how long you've been meditating, since I suggest that you don't use an alarm, is you look at your time before you start meditating. Maybe it's 9 a.m. And now you've looked at the clock and you started meditating, and you know that you started at 9 a.m. And then after you're done meditating, you look at the clock again. Oh, it's 9:15. Okay, so I've been meditating for 15 minutes. And you like to kind of check in about once a week to see how you're doing, because if you're at 15 minutes, that means you need to gradually expand. So about once a week, look at the time before you start meditating and look at the time when you're done. And now maybe next week you notice you're getting 18 minutes. Right? And you just gradually increase like this. And then when you notice that you're consistently hitting 30 minutes or more, you might still kind of check in. I do this even now after meditating for all these years. I still check in every so often just to be sure that I'm meditating for a given amount of time. Because sometimes 5 minutes of meditation can seem like an hour. But then sometimes an hour of meditation can seem like 5 minutes. So you would like to just check in about once a week on that. So let me know what questions you guys have here related to anything that I've shared. Again, you can put that into Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom. Or in Zoom, you can raise your hand and ask any questions that you like. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions anywhere. So just to kind of end off our little talk here for the first part of this 4-part series, I'll just remind you what the Buddha shared about meditation is to meditate, monks. Do not be complacent, lest you regret it later. This is my instruction to you. So you're going to need that dedication, the diligence, the determination to build up your practice, applying effort and energy. But remember, do that gradually and slowly. It's going to take you time to build up to this 2 or 3 sessions per day for 30 minutes or more. And one of the other things that I usually will share with students is to never, ever give up, because these discontent feelings of anger, sadness, frustration, irritation, annoyance, guilt, shame, fear, stress, anxiety, loneliness, boredom, the resentfulness, the bitterness, the hostility, this is all optional. You don't need to have these feelings. Sometimes people think in the human state that you're just going to experience these feelings for the rest of your life. Well, if you don't have the wisdom of how to eliminate them, yes, you will experience them for the rest of your life. But if you cultivate the wisdom on the path to enlightenment of how to eliminate them, you can actually eliminate these discontent feelings. But if you gave up on your meditation practice, you're just going to relegate yourself back to experiencing these feelings for an extended period of time for the rest of this life. So the way that complacency works is that if you're complacent, the sooner you can get out of that complacency, the easier it is. Whereas if you allow the mind to dwell in this complacency for multiple weeks or months, it's a lot harder to get out of the complacency. There was a period of time where I didn't meditate for 3 years. It was one of the worst 3 years of my life, but it was really hard to get back into meditating again. Whereas if I would have caught it within the first 3 days, it would have been a lot easier to continue with meditation. So you might notice periods of time where you're not meditating. Your meditation is going to develop over time, and your enlightenment isn't going to be determined on whether you meditate today or not. If you missed meditation today, that's not what's going to determine whether you get to enlightenment or not. What's going to determine whether you get to enlightenment in terms of meditation is, can you consistently meditate over a consistent, sustainable, long-term time frame? Can you be meditating over the next 3 years or 5 years or 6 years or 10 years? If you miss a meditation here or there, that's normal. That's understandable. That if you did, say, 2 sessions a day, that means in a month, you're going to be meditating about 60 times. But let's just say you missed 5 meditations and you only did 55. Okay, so you only got 55 in. That's fine. Your enlightenment isn't going to be determined whether you get 60 or whether you get 55. What's going to determine whether you get to enlightenment or not is, now that you've missed a couple of meditations, what are you going to do next? Are you going to turn that into 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 months that you're not meditating? Or are you going to get right back into it? So if you miss a few meditations here or there in a month, no big deal. Just keep meditating consistently over a long-term period. Can you be consistently and sustainably meditating for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 6 years? That's what's going to determine whether you get to enlightenment or not. So whether you get 60 sessions in a month or you get 52 or 58 or what have you, that's not what's going to determine whether you get to enlightenment. So in my opinion, I would encourage you to never, ever, ever give up, because that's what's going to ensure that you can consistently get to enlightenment and consistently develop your practice. And wherever you see that there's complacency, where maybe you went a whole day or two without meditating, get right back into it. Don't allow the mind to dwell in that complacency, because if you catch it early, it'll be a lot easier to get out of that complacency. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to guide you in a breathing mindfulness meditation session so you can experience it and you can learn it and understand it. And then we'll talk a little bit after the meditation. I did a meditation with students on Sunday prior to class, just kind of jumped right into it and we did meditation. But now you've got a bit more background. And if you're listening to this on the replay, I still encourage you to go ahead and do the meditation so you can get used to meditating regularly. So you will like to take a position either seated, lying, or standing in one of those three positions. What you're doing with the mind is going to be exactly the same. I'm going to guide you in the meditation once we get into meditation, but I'm going to ease us into meditation with some chanting. And if you know these chants, you're welcome to chant along as we ease into meditation. There's nothing mystical or magical. There's not a rite or ritual or ceremony or worship with this chanting. It's not a prayer or anything like that. It's just to help invigorate the mind and ease the mind into meditation by setting up mindfulness in front of you. And there's some other benefits too that I'm going to be talking about when I get to that in the group learning program. So if you'd like to take a position of seated, lying, or standing, I'm going to start with the chanting to ease us into meditation. And then afterwards, I'll come back with some guidance. And then there'll be a period of time where it'll be quiet. And then I'll come out of the meditation with some more chanting as well. Arahaṁ sammāsaṁ bhūto mhākvā bhūtaṁ mhākvannaṁ abhivātayāmi Savakato Mahakavata Ramo Namang Namasami Supatipano Mahakavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Napmurhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Napmurhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Napmurhasa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Iti Bhisso Bhagava Arahaṁ Sammasambuddho Vichacaraṇaṁ Sammuno Sakkhato Rokkhavito Anuttaro Purisa
Namasati satatava manusanam. Puto bhagavate.
Okay, with the lower body and hands and arms comfortable, and the upper body erect, just close the eyes and start breathing in through the nose and out through the nose. Here you're just looking to establish the breath, a nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. Not forced or controlled, just a gradual inhale through the nose, experiencing the full breath. And then when you're ready, exhale out through the nose. Breathing in. And out. Breathing in. And out. Your breath may not match up with the guidance that I'm providing, and that's okay. This is your practice. I'm just here for guidance. You can use this voice as a reminder that whenever you get to the next inhale, breathe in gradually through the nose, establishing a nice, natural, steady, consistent breath. And then whenever you're ready, exhale out through the nose, experiencing the full breath. Breathing in and out. Breathing in and out. Once the breath is well established, start fixating the mind on the breath. Either the sound of the breath coming into the nose, or the sensation of air moving over the skin into the nose. The breath is the present moment. Fixate the mind on the breath, the present moment. Breathing in. And out. Breathing in. And out. With the mind fixated on the breath, whenever you notice that it moves off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. No need to observe the thought, label it, judge it, analyze it, or even try to figure out where it's coming from. Whenever you notice that the mind is moved off the breath, cut that off, let it go, and come back to the breath, the present moment. Breathing in and out. Breathing in I'm going to be quiet now and let you do this work of focusing on the breath, cutting off and letting go anytime the mind moves off the breath. You have nowhere to go. There's nothing to do. No one needs you right now. This is your time to focus on the breath. Breathing in. And out.
สัมมาสัมพุทโธมหาเกวาพุทธังมหาเกวันหังอภิวาเทมิสวาคาโตมหาเกวตาดัมโมดามังนามาสามิสุปฏิปันโนภาคะวะโตสาวกสังโฆสังฆังนามามิณปะระสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะอิติปิโสมหาเกวาอระหังสัมมาสัมพุทโธวิจารณังสัมมโนสักขาโตโรกาวิโตอนุตตรโปริสาดามาสติสัตตาวามานุสนังโพโตภาควาติ
If you guys would like to slowly make your way out of meditation, I'm just going to share a few things with you guys as you guys are making your way out of meditation. Is that oftentimes when people first start meditating, they'll experience one of two things. They'll usually experience kind of a bombardment of thoughts where it'll just be like thought, 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 all the way through your meditation. If you experience this, this is completely normal.Or the other thing that you might have experienced is where you had a thought and then you indulged in that thought for a period of time. And then maybe 2 or 3 minutes down the road, you're like, oh yeah, that's right. I'm meditating. Let me bring my mind back. So if you experienced either of those two things, it's completely normal. It doesn't mean you're bad at meditation. It means that your mind is undisciplined. It's uncontrolled, right? This is what the enlightened mind does, is it'll roam and wander. And this is an indication that you need training of the mind, right? You're not going to be an expert at anything the first time you ever try it. So if you haven't meditated this way before, or if this is the first time you've ever meditated, this is completely normal to get a bombardment of thoughts or to indulge in a thought and then realize 2 or 3 minutes down the road that, oh yeah, I need to bring my mind back to the breath. So each time that you're meditating, you'll notice that you'll accumulate benefits more and more and more and more and more.The goal of this meditation isn't to eliminate your thoughts. That's not the goal. Even when your mind is enlightened, you're still going to have occasional thoughts during your meditation. The difference is that in the unenlightened state, you get the bombardment of thoughts or you indulge in a thought for a period of time before you realize you need to bring your mind back. In the enlightened mind, you'll notice when you have a thought right away, and you'll be able to cut it off and bring the mind back to the breath right away. It's not something that you'll have a bombardment of thoughts or an indulging in a thought. And you'll notice this gap between your thoughts, where you'll notice this quietness and stillness and peacefulness in the mind. So that's the difference, that you're not trying to eliminate your thoughts. You're going to always have thoughts during your meditation, but you would like to have more and more space between your thoughts and be able to control your mind more and more. But it's going to take many months and even years to be able to build up to the point where you accumulate enough benefits where the mind is quieted or stilled. This is what you're ultimately working towards, is that you're quieting the mind and stilling the mind. So in the meantime, you're going to have a bombardment of thoughts, right? There are students that have been studying with me for many years, and you know, usually within their first 6 months to a year, they're still having a bombardment of thoughts or certain indulgence in thoughts. This is completely normal. But over time, as you gradually build up your practice, you'll notice that you'll wear that away, and you'll notice more quietness and more stillness and peacefulness in the mind. So don't have the expectation that you should be an expert at this right away. In fact, you're going to hear me teach on Sunday to eliminate all these kinds of expectations. This is just burdening your mind with expecting one thing or another. And then if you don't experience that particular thing, you might be angry or frustrated or irritated. So you'd like to get to the point where you just start your meditation and then you end your meditation. Whatever time has elapsed, okay, that's the amount of time that it's elapsed. You're not interested in judging your meditation as either good or bad. Whatever it is, it is. If you meditate and you notice in meditation that you have a bombardment of thoughts and you finish up your meditation and you're like, oh wow, the mind is like really busy today, that's beneficial. That's a helpful meditation because you notice that your mind is bombarded with thoughts, it's really busy, and now maybe you take your day a little bit slower, right? You've gotten more wisdom through that meditation that you realize your mind is real busy. So each meditation, it's beneficial, and it's not going to live up to your expectations. So just get rid of your expectations of how your meditation should be or it shouldn't be, and just do the meditation, and then whatever happens, happens. And then just gradually build up your practice more and more. So I'm going to see if you guys have any questions before I end class. Remember, you can put it in the Facebook, YouTube, or Zoom, or you can raise your hand in Zoom and ask any questions that you like. Okay, I'm seeing a question coming in here on Zoom. It's from Julia. First of all, thank you so much, Teacher David, for your teachings. They have brought me a lot of peace. Sometimes when I am not meditating, many thoughts arise which I identify as craving. When you say let go and cut off, do you mean to distract myself and go back to the breath? I was born a Buddhist, was taught Vipassana meditation where I was told to stay with the thought and note it until it dissipates. I want to make sure I am doing this correctly. Yeah, so people who teach to observe the thought or note the thought, this isn't actually what the Buddha taught, and this is one of the reasons why we don't see a massive number of enlightened beings in the world, because people have gotten farther and farther and farther away from his teachings. The Buddha's teaching to cut off the thought and bring the mind back to the breath, and this is really important because as you build up that quality to be able to notice that you've had a thought and be able to cut it off and let it go, this is going to be helpful for you in daily life, so that as you notice the anger starting to arise, you can cut it off and let it go. But if you haven't trained to cut it off and let it go, you'll just look at the anger. You'll just look at the frustration. Okay, the mind's frustrated. Okay, the mind's irritated. Okay, the mind's annoyed. But you're going to continue to allow that thought to occur if you just note the thought in meditation. Instead, you'd like to cut it off and let it go. This is disciplining the mind to be able to let go. So in meditation, you need to learn to be able to notice when you have a thought and to be able to let it go so that the mind can return back to the breath. You can think about the breath like a post or a pillar. If you had this post or pillar and there were a bunch of animals tied to this post or pillar, the animals will be pulling in all these different opposite directions. The alligator would go to the river, the monkey would try to get to the jungle, the bird would try to fly to the sky, the snake would try to go to an anthill. All these different animals would be pulling in all these different directions. Well, when they get to the end of that rope, they're going to get yanked back and yanked back and yanked back because they have this post and pillar. But eventually, these animals are going to realize that they're tied to this post and pillar, and they're no longer going to pull. They're no longer going to pull towards wherever they're trying to head. They're just going to sit by that post or that pillar. So your mind is the same way. It's going to be pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling. And if you just keep yanking it back and yanking it back and yanking it back and yanking it back over a consistent long-term period, this is why you get more peacefulness and more joy in the mind, because the mind gets quieted and stilled. It sits down by that post or pillar. So your breath is the post or pillar that you're yanking your mind back to each individual time, so you can build the quality to be able to let go. Let go, let go. When people are teaching in Vipassana or any other type of meditation to note the thought or observe the thought, they're not teaching the mind to let go. They need to teach the mind to let go of the thought, so that way that you can train your mind to no longer form this conditioned feeling. So in meditation, you're training one way, where anything and everything that comes up, you're cutting it off and letting it go. And this is training your mind to have that mindfulness and concentration and be able to easily let go. But in daily life, you're only cutting off the unwholesome thoughts. If you have a wholesome thought that comes up in daily life, go forward, right? You like to call your mom, invite her out to lunch or dinner, take her out for lunch or dinner, go for it. That's a wholesome thought. You're practicing generosity. But if you had an unwholesome thought come up, like maybe you would like to steal something or punch someone in the face, or you have anger or frustration that arises, that's what you're cutting off in daily life. So your training in meditation looks one way, where you're cutting off anything and everything just because you're trying to build the quality to be able to cut off and let go and easily be able to do that. But in daily life, you're only cutting off the unwholesome thoughts. And this is similar to like a professional athlete. If I was a pole vaulter, I might be a professional pole vaulter. And when I go in the gym, I'm gonna be doing weight training, cardiovascular training, agility training. My training in the gym is gonna look one way, but then the sport is gonna look completely different because of being a pole vaulter. Well, it's the same thing here, that your meditation looks one way, where you're cutting off anything and everything because you're trying to train the mind to easily let go, because in the unenlightened state, it's trying to hold on. So you're cutting off anything and everything. And then in daily life, you're only cutting off the unwholesome thoughts. And you're gonna hear me talk about this 3 Sundays from now when I teach you about the mental discipline section of the Eightfold Path, and you'll see how it ties together with this meditation and why the Buddha taught it this way. So you talked about distracting the mind, right? So in meditation, you would like to just bring the mind back. And if you consider that a distraction, then okay, that's a distraction. But in daily life, over time, you're going to be able to internally cut off anything that's unwholesome that's arising. But ultimately, as you first get started, you might need to redirect the mind. You might need to distract the mind. So say you're sitting watching the news and you're noticing some frustration, some anger, some other thoughts, maybe annoyance is arising in the mind. Rather than just sit there and dwell on that thought, you might need to turn off the news and get up and go for a walk. This is cutting off and letting go, like redirecting the mind somewhere else. As you train in meditation and you train by redirecting the mind in daily life like this, over time, you'll get to the point where you can internally cut it off. You won't have to get up and go do something. But as your mind is still just getting started on your training, these are the ways that you train your mind to let go, because it doesn't want to let go. It's going to hold on and hold on and hold on due to its clinging. So great question there. Thank you for that. Let's see if we have any other questions coming in. Okay, let's see. I'm not seeing any other questions anywhere. So what I'm going to do is just end class here by thanking all of you guys for joining and invite you to attend our future classes. That on Sunday, I'm going to be starting a 3-part series on the Eightfold Path. This is the path to enlightenment. It's going to help you to understand the core central teaching of the Buddha and how to make your way to enlightenment through understanding these 8 individual factors. But I'm going to be breaking that down over 3 individual classes so we can penetrate deeply into each individual aspect. This Sunday, I'm going to be teaching the wisdom section, which is called right view and right intention. We're going to be using the original words of the Buddha, and then I'm going to help you to be able to understand how to learn it, how to reflect on it, to independently verify it, and how to practice it in your day-to-day life so you can start experiencing the results. And then next Wednesday, I'm going to be sharing the 2nd part of this learning breathing mindfulness meditation class, where we'll start our class with breathing mindfulness meditation. We're just going to do it together. And then I'm going to open up to any and all questions you guys have, because Between now and Wednesday, you'll have a chance to practice. Between the next 7 days, you should be able to practice a bit of meditation, and you might have some questions. You can always ask questions by putting them into the Facebook group, by asking questions in classes, by sending me a private message, or scheduling personal guidance by going to our website. You'll be able to see a link where you can schedule personal guidance one-on-one, and we meet in Zoom together. But the classes that I teach, you're always welcome to ask questions there. So on Wednesdays, I open up to any and all questions that you guys like, particularly in this four-part series on meditation. You might have questions around meditation. So between now and then, you can gradually build up your practice more and more and more over the coming months and years. But over the next 7 days, you should be able to have an opportunity to practice some of this. So you might end up with some questions on Wednesday. But if you have questions before Wednesday, you can always use any of those methods to be able to help you get answers to your questions. So thank you all for joining. Perhaps we'll see you guys in one of these future classes. Have a very lovely and wonderful rest of your day. Sawadee ka.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To provide support for this podcast, visit patreon.com/supportbuddha. To access more teachings, visit buddhadailywisdom.com. There, you will discover a full range of courses, retreats, and online resources to assist you on the path to enlightenment. Remember, to establish a daily, consistent meditation practice, along with learning and practicing these teachings, a well-developed meditation practice is the foundation in which to train the mind to attain enlightenment.